Patience is certainly a path to get results, but is always strengthened by perseverance. Proof of this is seen in the victims of rape by Catholic priests and bishops for decades. Their efforts to have the truth revealed were met with denial, silence. Took decades for the walls the Catholic Church erected to protect themselves to be torn down, yet still to this day, attempts at silence by the Church still have to be battled, but at least now with more rapid success. Our first guest today is with us. Look at all this and how the silence went even beyond the Church and what the present means for survivors, which he is one of the many. He's also the New Jersey State Director of Survivors Network for Those Abused by a Priest, also known as SNAP. Mark Crawford, how are you today, Mark?
Oh, very good, Chris. Thank you.
We're sort of mixed news, but all in all moving, it seems to be in the right direction. Let us start with, I guess, a conclusion, I guess we can call it one aspect of this issue. The New Jersey State Supreme Court has ruled that a grand jury to examine the allegations of sex abuse in the Catholic Church that can go on. Now, this is concerning an objection that they backed off of by the Camden Diocese, but it's still good to have this confirmation from the court through this ruling, though, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it certainly is. And since the court had heard the Camden bishop's arguments to oppose the grand jury, they had to make a ruling, even though the new bishop did step back and say that he would not oppose working with the Attorney General's office and allow a grand jury and a presentment to move forward. However, like I said, the previous bishop, almost 7 years ago, initiated this lawsuit against the Attorney General to prevent the investigation and presentment. And during that time, the other dioceses here in New Jersey were all aware and all, either at or on the phone during the court hearings. So they knew the action Camden had taken to suppress the grand jury. All the while, Camden had all the court proceedings sealed. So the victims and the AG, nobody could say anything. Nobody knew what was going on. And it was quite frustrating for the victims, who actually didn't believe the state wanted to move forward or pursue these actions. I mean, 7 years tied up in the court is just terrible. And, of course, the victims once again felt abandoned.
I saw this report, and I'm hoping this is not right, because it was the attorney for the church, Lloyd Levinson, who said, "The goal here is obviously to condemn the Catholic Church and priests and bishops." Is that something he really said?
It is something he said, yes. I was in the courtroom for the Supreme Court hearing, and he absolutely said that. I was actually stunned at their arguments. It was just terrible. And I think the court made it quite clear that they weren't buying the church's arguments to suppress or prevent the investigation from moving forward. And it wasn't just the church's arguments. The judge's ruling was clearly wrong, preventing before it even occurred, before there even was a presentment. So they were not at all convinced by the church's arguments and, of course, the lower court's standing.
Yeah, basically the lower court had said you're violating someone's privacy before any privacy was even violated, hypothetically.
Exactly. They were just assuming where all of this would go before it even happened. And that was certainly putting the cart before the horse. And clearly, thankfully, the Supreme Court saw fit that, one, these things do have a right to be vetted by the public, in the public, or made aware. Grand jury presentments have not been solely relegated to civil entities, so to speak, which was one of their arguments, that because they were a religious institution, it didn't apply to them. And I think anyone can wonder how on earth would any entity that deals with the public think that they're beyond or above reproach or investigation or any kind of oversight by the government.
Mark mentioned that this has been a 7-year ordeal getting to this point in this resolution. At least we hope it's the resolution for a report to now be initiated and commenced. So, and I think in light of that, too, we have to give appreciation to Matt Plotkin, the current attorney general for the state, because he could have easily just said, well, that was started before and there's other things we need to do. But no, he picked up, he took the baton and he continued to run with it.
Without a doubt, we owe a great deal of gratitude to the Attorney General's office for pursuing this ongoing legal battle that raged for years. But I will tell you, how on earth, you know, after calling victims to come forward and, you know, relive their abuse history and, you know, all this time and having their hands tied behind their back, it was really god awful. But you know, it's not just happening here in New Jersey. This is playing out in several other states right now, where the AG, or the local AG, or prosecutors cannot talk about what's going on because, again, the church there locally probably have had it sealed, and the investigations have been going on for years, and it really needs to stop. And I hope if the actions of the new Bishop of Camden, Joseph Williams, I hope others either learn to abide by what he has said, at least. I am cautiously optimistic because for years I have spoken with many, many bishops and church officials only to be bitterly disappointed. They would say one thing and not really follow through. And it's and I'm just one, right? One story. There's been countless victims, and it's time. It's long overdue, for some real openness, transparency, and honesty by our church and church officials. And unfortunately, we still see cases where bishops are hiding and dragging their feet and not being open and transparent.
Well, that leads us to this next instance, but I want to just, for you listening, if you want to see what the potential is of this New Jersey Supreme Court ruling, over on our downloads page on the website, I think it's around page 3 or 4 of the download section, we have the Pennsylvania investigation report, which is sizable, which is sickening, which is shocking, but it's certainly revealing the truth. And I have the confidence that that report from Pennsylvania is going to pale in comparison to what's going to come out from this report once it's completed here in New Jersey. We're talking with Mark Crawford, State Director of the New Jersey Offices of the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, snapnetwork.org, their website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. And as I said, Mark, this leads us now to what is still going on, as you referenced, that still a cone of silence is taking place. In this case, not directly with the Catholic Church, but certainly related, and it all involves Seton Hall University.
Absolutely. Seton Hall is one of the oldest Catholic universities in the country. There's a handful of them only that in which the local bishop or ordinary is in charge of that institution, and Seton Hall is one of them. So several years ago, after the McCarrick scandals came to light, there was concerns about the influence and impact McCarrick had on the seminarians who, by the way, the seminary for the Archdiocese of Newark is stationed within Seton Hall, both the lower college seminary, St. Andrews, and Immaculate Conception, which is the major seminary. So at the time, they were concerned, right, about McCarrick's influence. So then Cardinal Joseph Tobin had issued a authorized a law firm, prestigious law firm, Watkins and Latham, to conduct an investigation. That was done, and a report was finally issued that really got deep sixed. The board all heard of the recommendations, and apparently, allegedly, as reported by Politico earlier this year, apparently one of the individuals identified was the seminary rector, Monsignor Joseph Riley, who was in charge of the seminary at the time, that allegations were made, allegations were covered up or not reported under Title IX as required by law. There was talk or allegations of retribution against some of the victims and or whistleblowers. So there was a recommendation apparently made that said that Monsignor Riley could no longer assume any kind of leadership role at Seton Hall University. He could teach, but that was it. He went away for a year on sabbatical at some later point. And last year, Cardinal Tobin turned around and actually appointed him the new president of Seton Hall University, which is just mind-boggling to me. The report, both our governor and several state senators and those running for governor all called for the public release of that report. That was not done. The Cardinal now has issued a new investigation of the previous investigation regarding Monsignor Riley, which I don't know. To me, it just appears this is an attempt to rewrite history. Why wouldn't you just release the original report?
I mean, here's the thing, not having read the report, but normally you wouldn't put something in a report of sexual abuse unless you had testimony from a witness, from a victim, something to back up. You just don't make a report with empty charges. Otherwise, you're going to be sitting at the defendant's table for quite a lengthy period of time. So Seton Hall is basically looking at facts of abuse and covering up of abuse and saying, no, we don't want anyone to know about this. We're going to persecute the messenger instead.
Exactly, exactly. The former president, his name is Joseph Nyer, was, I guess, in when this report was read. So he knows of or knew of what was reported. I have learned recently that he wanted to talk to the new investigative firm, and he was told, no, he can't. They don't want to hear from him. Now, here's a person who knows firsthand. Why would you refuse to want to hear from him if you're really trying to get to the bottom of the truth? It's astounding that the leadership or the board regents of Seton Hall University can think this could fly. I mean, and Monsignor Riley, by the way, just to put it in context, was, prior to becoming the rector of the seminary, Cardinal Theodore McCarrick's, then Archbishop of Newark, his personal secretary. And after McCarrick left Newark for Washington, Monsignor Riley maintained a room at the seminary for Cardinal McCarrick. So when he would return from Washington, he stayed at the seminary. And so I find it quite incredible that this has all been covered up. Initially, even when Monsignor Riley was asked to speak, he said he was directed by the diocesan lawyers not to in the initial inquiry. Yet, who do you think authorized the investigation? It's just mind-boggling.
I'm no longer sickened or surprised. It's just, it's become so much normalcy of the way that the Catholic Church operates, even with less support. I mean, there was a time as recent as 5 years ago, we were having a conversation like this. I would be hammered by Catholics saying, just like the attorney said in the courtroom, "No, you're just Catholic bashing." And yet the church still feels empowered that they can get away with this, or are they getting away with it now between the court ruling and the work of the journalist with Politico? What's I'm not saying that the hierarchy of Seton Hall are the most intelligent, obviously. They're obviously the most self-defensive, but is this going to crack the wall that they built at Seton Hall down?
Well, I can say this. So several years ago, as I guess the lawyers for some of the victims from Seton Hall and elsewhere, the clergy abuse victims in the state, when the law had changed, right, had subpoenaed or requested the records from the Archdiocese to be turned over. And I'm sure most of the cases, and a lot of it was, I'll never say for certain that all of it was, but we do know this, that they never turned over this report that was done. And that came up in court just a few weeks ago. And the lawyers for Seton Hall tried to say, hey, this is protected under attorney-client privilege. Well, the judge disagreed and said, listen, I can't believe I'm just learning about this report from 5 years ago, and you have not yet turned it over. She said, you will turn it over immediately to me, unredacted. So she didn't see it their way either. They had hid that report. They buried it. And, I'm not saying it'll be made public at some point. I hope it will. I do. But it's clear that our Seton Hall board and or our current Cardinal Bishop of Newark, Cardinal Joseph Tobin, is not ready to do that. It's clear. And that really smacks of just more, just words about openness and transparency, but they're just not willing to do that yet. And I, again, just last week, I now heard in the news about a freshman at Seton Hall who was on their baseball team talking about severe hazing and sexual abuse in the locker room that has been going on. His dad apparently approached the coach back in February, and it still continued. And we're talking about egregious sexual activity in the locker room. And I'm like, after all of this, if you think after the controversy about the school's president and McCarrick's history, that there would be some greater oversight to make sure these things are not happening.
Well, here's
it's clearly not the case.
Well, we have to wrap up here, but what I'm hoping is, and this might be the only way to get a university like Seton Hall to respond, it'll be up to the alumni, especially those with a lot of money, who give a lot of money to Seton Hall University, to say, you know what, the bank is closed until you clean up the house, because you're obviously not doing right with the money I'm giving you, and maybe that might be the foundation of an answer in tandem with the precedent set by the court ruling regarding the Camden Diocese. Follow as, believe it or not, after all these decades, there's still an evolving awareness that needs to be developed and shared about the abuse that's happening within the Catholic Church and how to this day the Catholic Church seeks to deny it, cover it up, or prosecute and persecute those who are trying to get to the truth. Find out more about this issue. If you're in New Jersey, snapnetwork.org/new_Jersey. If you're listening on the stream, there are chapters all throughout the country, snapnetwork.org. He is the director of the New Jersey Office of Survivors Network for those abused by priests, Mark Crawford. Mark, thank you for your dedication to bringing the truth to as many people as possible. And thank you as well for always being forthcoming about your own story, because that's also empowering others who need that empowerment. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for the opportunity to help others feel that, know that they're not alone.